President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on this June the 27th on the West Coast, now June the 28th on the East Coast, and also in the Central Time Zone. Those of you in between will soon catch up to us. It's so nice to have you with us on this Friday evening. This is usually our science and technology night, and it will be again tonight, although we are going to be talking about a few other things that relate directly to science and technology. There have been some very interesting events taking place. In fact, I'm surprised I didn't hear anything about it sooner. I mentioned hearing about the launching of an ICBM yesterday on yesterday's show. And turns out that that's likely an event that took place. And it was seen near Bozeman, Montana. This missile had been launched from a base in North Dakota, heading west, presumably in the direction of Russia. And out of nowhere, a triangular craft, which had been cloaked, appeared and shot the missile out of the sky. There was also a report that another triangular craft, I don't know if it was the same one or a different one, was shot down over Norway, and presumably Russia shot it down. And one would have to ask, what the heck is going on? Well, it so happens that there were some financial payments to be made to some 160 or so countries involved in the Wantagate scandal, and these are the Tier 1 country payments that were being made, it was reported, in New York City under heavily guarded situations. Evidently, there were some U.S. Marshals at five New York banks, and these monies were being paid out to the countries, the diplomatic corps of these various countries, and they were immediately sending the money overseas. We're talking about truckloads of money, folks. Now, I have been criticized in the past by those that have been trying to keep this story from becoming more public. The mainstream media obviously has been told not to report it, but it's the truth and it's going on, so why shouldn't we talk about it? That's what we do on Evident Footprints, and it's happening all over Internet talk radio. I'm not the only one that is talking about it. What's interesting is the more famous, the more popular shows are the ones saying that this whole thing is a hoax, but it's been covered in great detail on Christopher Story's website, www.worldreports.org. And I have posted Christopher Story's articles on my website, Direct Light Productions, both under Wantagate and under News, as well as many other research-based websites around the world. So I'm not the only one publishing or republishing Christopher's work. In fact, I have written a few articles, one which was in the Idaho Observer in January of 2007. And this has been going on since the original settlement with Leo Wanta in December of 2005. We went through 2006, 2007 with no payments going on. Although trillions of dollars became a financial ping pong ball for various banks, Bank of America, Wachovia, Citibank, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, some of these are brokerage firms, they're not banks per se, and Deutsche Bank, Chemical Bank, Bank of Nova Scotia, New York Bank of Mellon, on and on and on. There were other banks that have been involved in this money laundering, as far away as India, North Korea, Germany, Ireland was the new one. In fact, the report coming out around the 18th to the 20th was that George W. Bush, our president, and Gordon Brown, the prime minister of England, were caught in flagrante, to say, to use a term that Christopher Story uses, red-handed. They were caught opening bank accounts, private bank accounts, to further launder money in Ireland. This is reported by Christopher Story, and it coincides with this event, this ICBM being launched and shot out of the sky. Evidently, Russia was quite upset that the payments had still been stalled. But maybe it was ironic, maybe it was mere coincidence that the payments all of a sudden began to have been made after this event occurred. And this was witnessed, I'm told, by thousands of people around the world, the two distinct events that I mentioned. So, that said, there are many anomalies occurring around the world, and you can't blame it all on oil, and it has nothing to do with global warming. You can attribute it definitely to the rising prices of things, because when you cut off someone's illegal money supply, then they have to raise the taxes. They have to raise prices to make up for what they lose from what they've stolen. If they can't get to the stolen funds, and even these accounts in Ireland, I understand, have been frozen. So again, we have the crooks are getting caught, and you haven't heard a lick of it in the mainstream media. Very little even in the alternative media. But we're bringing it to you probably first here on Evident Footprints. Now, with that, I want to introduce tonight's guest. He is a scientist, an inventor, an author, a teacher, and a lecturer, and he has been looking at some photos that we both came into possession of, which show two saucers flying over some part of Germany. I don't know the exact location. What's interesting is we began analyzing the photos to look closer at the craft. Basically, it's two discs, some distance apart, and in the black of the night, they're glowing sort of a red color. When you begin doing various filtering adjustments, auto leveling, or even photographic inversions to try to bring out details and change contrast and the gamma levels of these photos, some really interesting anomalies occur. And we can draw parallels to the energy that's being emitted from the saucers and the fields around the saucers, in other words, to events that occurred on 9/11. They're very similar, which implies that the process for bringing the buildings down at the World Trade Center may have had everything to do with the type of technology seen in the anomalies in these pictures. And we're going to be talking about that with tonight's guest, my good friend and our regular Friday night guest, and he's becoming a co-host, and also our science advisor, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Yes, sir, Don. Thank you so much. And you're right. There's a lot of stuff going on this week. Amazing.
Yes, I know you're privy to much of this. In fact, you brought some of this to my attention, and I guess you were doing this while some other people were trying to let me know. So the fact that this got out amongst the scientists and those that are truth seekers says a lot about its integrity. Not necessarily the integrity of what went down, but the fact that we were able to discover that it was going on. So, you know, we're appreciative of all the people that assisted us in bringing this information forward. What are your reactions to some of the events I described, if we could start there, from a scientific
point of view? I'd like to start at the beginning, if it's all right with you. The one thing that amazes me the most is the fact that an ICBM was launched in the first place. Because unless political protocol has taken a U-turn, that requires authorization from the highest plateaus of government, either the vice president or the president. Usually it's the president himself. And with all the Russian sub activities and airplane activities over Alaska, the Pacific coast, they have seen missile carrying subs of Russian origin in the Pacific and again in the North Atlantic. And I've heard that there was even some in the Gulf, which is pretty amazing. Naturally, they're ticked off because these payments have been withheld, and it's going on 2 or 3 years now that this nonsense has been going on, so you can't blame them for being angry. But the thing that's amazing is that the missile was actually launched, especially in the direction of Russia, and it forces one to ask the question, what the heck is the meaning of this? Is somebody actually nuts enough to entice the Russians, you know, to a critical DEFCON level by launching a missile in their direction? Or was it done deliberately so that it could be shot down deliberately, which would be another way of flexing our muscles and saying, hey, don't mess with us. We've got things you don't know about. And this kind of calls to mind the talk we had months back when that other missile was destroyed North Korea launched. Do you remember that, Don?
Yes. In fact, I did a special on the Insight Hour here on BBS Radio back at that time with Dr. Len Horowitz and Reverend Roxy Hampton. And we spoke about the fact that they said they were going to shoot that satellite down with a missile from a ship. I think the ship was called the Cleveland, by the way. And everyone presumed that it would have been shot from space using a directed energy weapon. So what they're telling us and what's going on are two different things. I find it ironic, too, and I'm wondering how you your take on the craft that was shot down over Norway.
Well,
that's sort
you know,
of, that's
unless,
sort of the Russians saying, well, look what we can do back. You know.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing, too. And unless the thing can really move at ungodly speeds, it's hard for me to believe it's the same craft, because the one incident occurred over Montana and Idaho, and the other is a long ways off. If it's over, what was it, Nova Scotia, where they shot that other one down?
Well, no, I think what it was the ship was over, or this craft was over Nova Scotia, and it made the beeline for the North Dakota area. That was my understanding of it. This other craft that ended up being shot down over Norway, now maybe that had left from Nova Scotia. I'd have to go back and reread it. There were some grammatical errors in the article itself, but the general account was that ham radio operators were monitoring this in real time around the world and calling into this Q Factor radio show on Steve Quayle's site. And the guy that presided over that show, who calls himself Hawk, was the one that wrote up this report that we almost went to nuclear war. And they had been monitoring the communications about, the provocation between Iran and the United States, I should say Israel and the United States upon Iran. You know, Israel's urging us to go to war against Iran. And the Russians are very upset about this. So that type of chatter was going on, too. That very well may have had everything to do with those payments, and I find it very interesting that the payments were made on the same day as that event. Those things
don't
happen.
Well, I hope the payments were actually made. If not, there's going to be more shenanigans to come.
Well, their intent was not to make the payments, but they froze the accounts in Ireland, and that really sealed their fate. They had to do this.
Yeah, no, I realize they didn't want to make the payments. After all, we're not dealing with choir boys here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're preaching to the choir.
getting back to the main topic, it's a little bit confusing, but it almost looks as if we are using our older technologies to demonstrate the existence of secret technologies. Either that or there is direct intervention from extraterrestrials. I don't know how any other way to interpret the events concerning this missile. And apparently there were many, many witnesses to this. It wasn't a question of, you know, some isolated idiot running around. There's a lot of people saw this, right, Don?
Yes, and I mentioned on my show last night that it wasn't crash dummies, weather balloons, or swamp gas. And I'm led to believe that it is, or these triangular craft were ours, and that we showed them that we could shoot this down. In other words, as if to say, if you shoot a missile at us, we can take it out. And they countered by saying, if you bring one of these craft by us, we can take the craft out. So there's obviously some kind of stalemate situation going on there's some one-upmanship happening, and it's critical for people to know this. I mean, why shouldn't we know this is going on? Well, who's doing the stealing, and who's acting out, you know, this insanity? The same people. And we have a complicit, corrupt media that refuses to report this. Well, you know, when we have a nuclear explosion, now, I don't know if this missile was armed. That's a consideration, because there's got to be some fallout from that explosion if it was armed.
Well, you know, that's probably very true. And unless you are equipped with, you know, the proper instrumentation to detect it, you wouldn't necessarily know. But considering all the other nonsense that the general public has been subject to with this government of ours, it wouldn't surprise me if it were armed and they disintegrated it without even worrying about the fallout and the effects of it. I mean, look at all the rest of the stuff that's happened, which nobody cares about. I mean, it's really, it's bordering on total insanity. I can't believe that they would risk nuclear war over these payments, because then there'd be no winners. You know, do you remember that movie War Games? The
mm-hmm.
conclusion was the only good move is not to play. And
yes.
Apparently they should all sit down and watch that movie, you know, Don?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And you know, there's a lot of... there's a lot of realism in there, because those ideas come from the very things that they do anyway. Only they blame it on a kid. You know, they blame it on a teenager. And it's the teenager, the hacker, that solves the problem in the end anyway. The very kid that started the whole thing. And there's a bit of irony in that, a bit of metaphor, if you will, because... If that's the kind of thing a teenager does, you know, an adolescent, then it tells you a lot about the mentality of those doing it for real.
Yeah, and it's just a shame that people like that, with that type of psyche and mentality, are the kind of people that are in a position to push these buttons. You know, I don't know what it will take to wake the public up. You know, maybe the disintegration of a major city might make the news. That, you know, that's a possibility. Or maybe it'll be whitewashed in some way. Oh, you know, it was never really there to begin with. It was a rumor. But Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say. Their refusal to acknowledge it and the media's complicit behavior in, you know, after the fact, you have to assume that some media found out or knows everything that went on both counts, about the money as well as about this event or these events. They have to be aware of this. They have to be told not to report it, which is why they didn't. So how are they going to get the egg off of their face? Well, the next time we have an event, a nuclear event, who are they going to blame it on? It'll be Osama bin Laden again. or you know, their next patsy, whoever that might be. Well, all we're doing here is speaking the truth as we know it, and that's far more than the media is doing, and they have a duty to do that. So we could beat this into the ground. I don't know where we'll get until we get more facts on it, but it's been pretty quiet. It's been silenced to some extent. Even the original story is buried within Steve Quayle's website. You have to dig for it. It makes you wonder why. But nevertheless, the major topic of tonight's show is on these anomalies that we found in the aforementioned saucer photo that came from Germany. And if you would...
Yeah, I examined that quite stringently, and it is a remarkable picture. There's no two ways about that. I'm in total agreement with you, by the way, Don, that it looks to me, especially with the filtering that you provided, that these two craft are communicating or downloading data or something between themselves using a light bridge. And the thing that's interesting is in the process of doing this, the propulsion equipment and everything else has left a very intense thermal print, which is also evident on the pictures, and it leads to a lot of interesting conclusions, as you well know.
Yes. Now, Ken Adachi received the pictures originally, and you know, he thought I'd be interested in looking at them, and we started playing around with zooming and trying to get a clearer image of the craft. And what became apparent to me at one point, I mean, I've seen so many pictures of crafts that there's no doubt that they exist. And the question then becomes, who do they belong to? Well, you could determine that if you could ascertain what the propulsion system is. Anti-gravity is accomplished in various ways. And there's one, more than one species flying these craft. And so, what we noticed were the anomalies in the space as we, sort of played around, to use the term loosely, as we experimented with different lighting schemes to change the contrast in the pictures. What became apparent to me was that you could see a field around the crafts, and it's apparent that it's an anti-gravity propulsion system, or I should say anti-matter propulsion system, and there are many, many metaphysical anomalies occurring in the vicinity of these craft. I use the explanation on last night's show that it resembles or it reminds one of the dolphins or the porpoises that follow a ship out at sea, where they'll sort of be leaping out of the water near the bow of the ship, keeping a pace in front of it. In this case, these craft are hovering, and these entities are all around the craft, on top of each other and moving through each other, which gives a multi-dimensional perspective. And what I know, I mentioned this to you off the air, what I know about nuclear events is that when there is a nuclear explosion in this three-dimensional world, there is a tear in the fabric of the time-space continuum. And our scientists, as brilliant as they may be, I have not figured out a way to repair it. In fact, every time they attempt to repair it, they do further damage. You may have heard those stories yourself, and I'd really like you to comment on that phenomenon, because we're going to tie it to something else in a little
bit.
Yeah.
Well, here's the way I looked at the entire thing. I tried to relate it to what I know from my own past studies and readings. And there's some interesting correlations that come out of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, for instance, where they talk about the fact that there are seven heavens or seven ethereal realms, the lowest one of which is closest to the surface of the planet and is occupied by various demons and entities. And in the Book of the Dead, they talk about the fact that when you're dying or pass on, you have to get through this barrier or this layer before you can go on to the higher realms and find your just reward, whatever that may be. And they actually give instructions which you are supposed to use to prepare yourself while you're still alive on how to deal with these frightening creatures which you must encounter. So there is actually stuff in the literature that talks about entities living in the first heaven or the first celestial layer above the earth. The other thing that occurs to me in regard to this was the work done by the Atlanteans in this field. As you probably know, Egypt was a colony of Atlantis. And in Egypt, they referred to the spirit as the Ka, and just K-A. And there's writings in the Egyptian Book of the Dead which tell a great deal about the Ka. But what's interesting, if you go back further into the Atlantean, they refer to this phenomenon as Davitika. And it's a much more generalized term which seems to suggest that the Meissner fields, which are capable of animating and directing the growth of various animal forms, for instance, also occupy this realm, and they're just kind of wandering around looking for a body to inhabit, or looking for a point of conception so that they can rush in and cause and direct the cellular growth, let's say, for an elephant or a camel or a horse, or maybe even creatures we don't know about. So there's actually a lot been written on this material. And of course, now we're at a point where we've got weapons and technologies which apparently create fields which interact with these layers or these dimensions, if you prefer that term. And as you mentioned it, you know, tears can occur in the space-time continuum. And these events are violent enough that they attract these wake riders, as you call them, like the porpoises. There might be a certain thrill or a certain reason why these entities poke through, perhaps hoping to find something to manifest or just enjoying the liberation from another dimension. But I did study the pictures that you sent me, and although I must say the computer that I had access to didn't have anywhere near the clarity of your device, I could see exactly what you were talking about. Demonic faces, animal forms. I believe I saw wolves and lizard-like things and all this stuff. In the turbulence around the ships themselves. And it's amazing that that would be there, you know. So as I discuss with you, my first inclination is to say, well, you know, the turbulent pattern is so random that perhaps the imagination is just forcing these things to present themselves. But when you look at it in detail, I mean, it's pretty amazing because usually when the imagination is in charge, you're pretty well aware of what you're imagining. But in this case, the more you study it, the more you see. Which kind of suggests that it's something beyond imagination. Wouldn't you kind of agree with that, Don?
Absolutely. In fact, my first impression when we did these inversions is that we were seeing pixelation, which occurs when you know, we took a small photograph that had been It was in a JPEG format, okay? So it was digitized. When you begin enlarging a thumbnail print, it begins to pixelate after one or two phases of zoom, and it depends on the particular program that you might be using to do this. Now, we're not attempting to modify the photograph for purposes of faking something. This is forensic study or even scientific study of what is there. So we use the same technique over and over. What I noticed is I'm looking at what we know as the black sky with a color inversion, which changes the contrast between the objects and the space around it. And what became apparent is what is in the normal black sky. Where there is no light, you can't see these things. Can you imagine if you can light up the black sky around a craft when you see these sightings and zoom in on it, you should be able to see these things. We can't see this with our ordinary eyesight, yet I began to see first symmetry between, and you described it accurately as turbulence, but is it wind turbulence or is it just pure energy? I tend to think it was.
I think it's an etheric turbulence because.
Yeah. Yes.
It's pretty energetic. I mean, it's like a primal form.
Yes, exactly. And I'm lacking in your scientific acumen, so I may not use the term, but I understand exactly what you're saying. And what I recognize is the same demonic forms that I saw in another event, and that was the World Trade Center photos that I posted on my website, and many, many people have seen these phenomenon in videos, in documentaries done about 9/11, when the flame, the fireballs come bursting out of the World Trade Center towers. And people said, you can see this is some kind of a demonic monster. Those are the phenomenon that occur under extreme anomalous energy situations. And I say anomalous or extreme, meaning like nuclear events. These types of visions are seen in the mushroom clouds. If you study close up the phenomenon of the mushroom cloud, you don't see it in the long shot, but when you zoom in on that mushroom cloud, you can see these anomalies. And you can see it in the fireball and even in the destructive debris that flies out, you know, when you have this massive expanse the fireball of the nuclear event, you know, just creating wind and destruction. You know, you've seen the films of the trees bending over and breaking and buildings just disintegrating. Well, zooming in on those events, you can see these same types of entities. So they're either attracted to the event or they're allowed in through the event because that tear in the fabric of our dimension allows them to come in. They're everywhere, but they tend to go where they can feed, let's say. They particularly have an affinity toward negative energy. They feed off of fear. Fear is a very real frequency, even though it's caused by illusion. You see, this is what causes denial in people, is that they can't overcome the feeling. And so their higher senses, their intuition and their spiritual capacity is limited by their thoughts and the fright that manifests itself in the physical body. And these entities, like you said, will seek a place to go where there's an opening. One who feels that they're being attacked has an opening in their aura, in their makeup. And these entities, this is how possessions take place. This is how even things like curses can manifest themselves. Now, they're contrary to God. This is, if it's anti-matter, you're talking about anti-God. And if these are things that are able to transit a portal that's been facilitated They have to come from a different timeline and from a different dimension. And so their activities are going to be pretty much what their normal nature is. They're going to remain negative entities, and they're not going to be trying to do positive things or taking on positive energy. They're going to seek like energy. Now, are they like the seagulls that would follow the ship, hoping, you know, to catch a fish or a crust of bread? Or are they allowed to come in and they immediately go to the source of that caused that rift in the fabric of time and space? That I can't answer conclusively, but it really doesn't matter at that point. They're there. And they show up in the World Trade Center as well. They show up in the smoke clouds, in the debris clouds, and they're very similar. Very, very similar. Same types of animals. And coincidentally, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, don't start bringing up UFOs, you know, when you talk about 9/11, but there is video and a photograph of that. I've got the photograph on my website. This video and photographs were taken by either media people or military people. I didn't take the photographs, but I studied the photographs. And it's quite evident that these manifestations did take place, which leads one now to postulate that some similar type of technology or energy weapon was used on 9/11. Comments?
Well, I definitely agree that the entities are there in the 9/11 stuff. I've seen them. I've watched the films, you know, not only the ones that were available to the public, but also ones that were shared privately amongst people who do this kind of research, and they're pretty frightening, especially when you see the entities. I don't know what the word would be, swarming in and out of this reality and regaining their same form, which is pretty hard to pass off as an effect of the moment. It's more than just illusionary. The biggest problem, frankly, Don, is most people who see it prefer to say, I can see them, but, you know, it's probably just, a form taken on by the smoke or the heat. Because I don't think most people would be comfortable with the idea that some demonic entities were involved in that kind of destruction. But as you say, and as I have said earlier, if they exist already in this other plane, in this other domain, and it just takes an event of a certain type and magnitude to allow them to transport into our region of reality, then it's something that should be looked at very seriously. And as far as the destruction of the World Trade Center is concerned, there's two things at this point which almost everybody agrees upon. And I don't mean everybody in the sense that every Tom, Dick, and Harry, but I mean everybody who's investigating this to find an explanation deeper than the ones that were offered by the normal authorities. And that is, A, there's no way in the world that the airplanes themselves caused this massive type of destruction. And B, there was something used that had some pretty chilling properties about it, because in the slow motion films you can literally see the supporting beam structures flying out of the building, and it gives the impression almost like iron filings in a magnetic field. You can literally see them following a pattern as these beams and metallic supports come flying out of the debris. And what's interesting about that is under a microscope or a strong magnifying glass, you can see these beams very clearly. And they all appear to be about the same length. The ones I looked at were maybe about 3/16 of an inch long in the photographs, and they have this incredible pattern that they make in the air like a fountain. And then we find out later on that after the event was over, one of the first things that they did was gather up all this steel and get it the heck out of there without letting anybody look at it or examine it, almost as if they were trying to hide something about the nature of the metal itself after the event. Had you heard anything about that, Don?
Yes. In fact, I had the distinct pleasure to talk to Dr. Judy Wood, who has been examining this very closely. And she has been doing some parallel research in conjunction with John Hutchison and the Hutchison effect. Now, she took some close-up photographs and made comparisons to normal plumbing fixtures and the bends that you get in the various types of pipes that you would connect to a sink or a bathtub or a shower or a toilet or any plumbing fixture. And she showed a variety of metals that were bent. And she showed even some samples that were in the building that somehow survived to some extent. And there was a certain kind of pitching of the metal that showed that there was an anomaly, that this was not normal degradation of metal, that there must have been a direct energy weapon involved. As well as the fact when you make these comparisons now to these beams you're describing, the beams were relatively short and they were bent just like these pipe fixtures, these regular plumbing fixtures. And I'm talking about like a 1 to 2 inch pipe, like a drain pipe coming out the bottom of a sink, or the feed line to some lavatory fixture. Or a shower. And you know the type I'm talking about, where you go to buy this fitting and it's already bent for you, so you don't have to do it. Now, it's quite possible a plumber might do that, and he has to have special tools, and he uses this technology to bend the pipe to fit an unusual space or to do a custom fit, let's say. So you could go out and buy this pipe bent, or you could do it yourself to customize the work and make it more precise. What shows up in these I-beams, these steel beams, is a phenomenon that looks much like the deterioration of a fiberglass automobile when it's been totaled in an accident. You get this sort of flaking type effect. You get shards of fiberglass that protrude, and there's sort of an implosion that takes place in the solid piece, and it looks sort of like a broken baseball bat. You've seen a baseball player break his bat when he hits the ball a certain way, and there's this shattering. And the end of the bat is a shard. Well, there's this shard appearance to these steel beams, which is incredibly impossible just from regular heat. It wasn't a regular event, and it carried even into the destruction of motor vehicles. Some cars, some police cars that were parked blocks away from the World Trade Center, even a fire engine. This fire engine was absolutely totaled, flattened like a pancake, and burned to a crisp. And a few feet away from that was an overturned car, shiny new, as if it had just been lifted up in the air and flipped over. So this is now the Hutchison effect. This is an anti-gravity effect. So it might one could postulate, and I think even go beyond that, but I'm not the scientist, but to me, it has all the earmarks of anti-gravity that took place, lifting some of those vehicles and just flipping them. The ones that didn't get flipped were totally destroyed. They were burnt to a crisp.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that. During the research that I did years back, trying to follow up on the connection between Otis Carr's work and Nikola Tesla, I came across a lot of curious documents. And one that was the most unusual of all, and I think I mentioned this last year when we talked in more detail about the Tesla stuff, was this very peculiar article that was written by a priest. I don't remember his name right now, but I tried for 2 or 3 years to track this guy down, and I literally couldn't find any connection to him in any of the major priesthoods or religious organizations. So I finally had to give up. But it was the most cogently written paper on the subject that I had encountered without getting into that murky area where the military doesn't want you to go. And the thing that was so striking about it was, first of all, it was written in very precise scientific language. And secondly, it was supported by tensor analysis, where the equations were actually presented. So, I mean, whoever was the author of this paper was nobody's fool. He knew what he was talking about. But the most interesting thing that he talks about in the paper is the fact that according to everything that was known about the nature of gravity, and of course this would go to the mid-50s, so there's probably even more known today, although we're not being informed of it. That there was a relationship between electrical potential and a gravitational potential. And, of course, this is very interesting because if you take even that by itself without going any deeper, you'll automatically see a correlation in reality because the Earth's electric field, and I presume most people realize we have an electric field, has a gradient structure of 100 volts per foot, which means that on an average day when there's no thunderstorms or, you know, no excessive humidity, a 6-foot-tall man, for instance, would have a potential of 600 volts between his head and his feet if he's standing. And so there is this, and that's, of course, at the surface of the planet where the gravitational gradient, you know, is also prominent. So the mere fact that these two fields superimpose and work together is already of interest. The second thing that was spelled out in the paper was the fact that if you disturb one of the two potentials, you automatically have an effect upon the other. And the inference was that with the proper electrical disturbance, you would cause a resulting change or propagation of some kind of disturbance in the associated gravitational field. And this paper was really a very interesting document, and it gave me a lot to think about. But now referring to what you were just mentioning, it's very interesting that you would see the possible correlation at work in an advanced weapon system or the effects of some kind of a field device wherein you not only get the levitation effect but also the effect of enormous instantaneous current flow which would be associated with a change in gravitational potential. So you get a vehicle that's completely melted deformed, a current of that magnitude that could cause that to happen would possess an enormous instantaneous magnetic field, which would just tear the object to pieces. As a matter of fact, the Hutchinson effect also demonstrates that quality. Some of those huge copper blocks and bus bars that Hutchinson plays around with, they shrivel up like old inner tubes on the one extreme, and to the other extent, they fly apart, as you mentioned, depending upon the severity and quality of the effect. Now, mm-hmm. the flying apart thing is not too hard to understand, because that's something that actually happens in an ordinary current transformer. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but if you overload one and it doesn't have enough protection, and if the rate of change of current is fast enough, what happens is the windings in the transformer literally explode like a fragmentation bomb, and the copper fragments fly out of there with enormous devastating potential. As a matter of fact, they have actually been seen to penetrate the steel containers that hold the core of the transformer and the insulating oils. And for that to happen, the forces have to be absolutely astronomical. Of course, they don't occur under normal circumstances. And here's where you get into all that stuff that we talked about so intensely with the Tesla portion of our show, where you have transient phenomenon that occur in microseconds or possibly even nanoseconds of time. And the impulse associated with that, whether it's an electrical, gravitational, or magnetic in nature, is got to be completely off the charts. Now, you know, how do you relate this to something that we could tag back to one of these spacecraft? Well, as you pointed out in the photograph, Don, the thermal footprint of the vessel becomes very obvious when you use your red filtering, and it demonstrates that there is a very hot spot inside the ship, which might be immediately related to an anti-gravity device that's powered by an antimatter engine of some sort, because the early postulation on that was that antimatter, by its very nature, would possess anti-gravity. And so here you have the possibility of tying all of these different things together in one interesting theory, that you have an anti-gravity ship propelled by antimatter engines and capable of directing a gravitational beam, which can be extremely destructive because of the way it affects the electrical and magnetic properties of anything that it encounters, particularly if it's a conducting material like steel or copper.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope I didn't throw too much at you there, but that's kind of the way I'm looking at it.
No. Now, in terms of your first example about the potential, and you said you prefaced your comment by saying you may or may not be aware of this, I did something which one would conclude was rather stupid, but I learned a lot about how AC functions, alternating current for the listeners. I took something like a 4-inch bolt, and made a coil by wrapping some wire around it and plugged it in the wall. Okay, now imagine what that did. It did exactly what you described, although because it was only 110 volts or 115 volts coming out of the socket, it only flew maybe 10 feet. but it's completely singed all the insulation on the wire. Now, I was doing that to understand what the impact of feeding a parallel AC input into a single coil would produce, okay, with leads on each end, of course. Now, I went further on later in my electronics career and started building my own power supplies, and I learned the concept of a bridge rectifier and how the diodes separate and convert the AC into direct current. And I learned how to use various devices to step down resistors and that to step down the voltage to create power supplies of certain types. And I built 12 volt and 9 volt and 5 volt and got into the troubleshooting of power supplies and circuit boards, learning how to measure voltages and all that. So I've had some experience in that area. Now, it was a good way to get out of school. I found something as simple as plugging a little folded piece of foil from the back of a gum wrapper or a stick of gum. You could peel the paper and separate the foil and fold it up in a manner similar to an appliance plug and plug it into the wall, and you could blow out the fuses in the school. So it was a stupid thing to do, but it was interesting because we were curious, and we did things like that to see what would happen. Okay, so I understand that phenomenon in the grander sense, although this is just a microcosm of what you're speaking about. While you were speaking, what comes to mind is that all of these phenomena are frequency dependent, that these entities exist in a particular frequency, they come from a particular frequency, and just moving into the portal, the dimensional portal, they seek out like frequency. And fear is a frequency, as is light is a different frequency. In fact, these things tend to move away from the light whenever possible, which is why they tend to try to inhabit things to get away from the light. And they usually have a negative impact. One of these entities inhabiting a person causes the person to not function properly, to become sick or to act insane or to act possessed. So there is a spiritual connection to this in terms of humans. And likely there's a correlation with the animal kingdom as well.
I agree with you there completely, because we were speaking about the Russians earlier. Despite the fact that they've been given a pretty bad name down through the Cold War years, they're really a pretty amazing people. And at a time when we were ignoring a lot of this type of technology, at least in the public eye, they were digging deeply into all sorts of things of this sort. And what's interesting was that they were very, very interested in the true nature of the soul of living beings. And I can't remember the name of the two girls. One of them, I think, was Lynn Schroeder, and another gal went to Russia, and they interviewed a lot of these scientists that were working on some of this stuff. And of course, what they brought back was only the tip of the iceberg, Don. But they wrote a book called "Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain," which came out in the early '60s.
Yes, I read that. Yes.
Yeah, well, you remember in there they talked about the fact that they actually did experiments with sensitive electronic equipment and different types of optical filters to view people as they were dying and animals as they were being whacked or killed or whatever word you want to use. And they could actually see an electromagnetic effect of some sort leave the body, and they perceived that this was, in fact, a soul. Well, you know, we've been talking about souls for as long as there have been people on Earth, and the interesting thing about it is we know that it's spiritual. We know that it's non-physical in the sense that you can't interfere with it or touch it or see it under normal conditions. But isn't that also the same description of a radio wave, a microwave, or, you know, an electromagnetic field? You can't see or touch them either, so in a sense, they're spiritual. And so maybe the whole deal with the spiritual thing is that it's just, you know, the more tenuous components of reality operating at these higher frequencies, and essentially they manifest in the ether the same way that the physical qualities that we know and are familiar with manifest in the 3D world.
Well, I agree with you. Yeah.
It's not so far out what you say about the fact that these are not only electromagnetic, but that they interact with the animal and spiritual kingdoms. Well, why shouldn't they?
Well, therein lies the purpose for the mind and the physical control on this planet, or the mental control. In other words, the higher the frequency, the higher the consciousness. And so if they can keep our frequency attuned to the lower frequencies in the physical and mental realms, they feel they can control us there. Now, who would want to do that? Someone that fears our higher consciousness? Why should they fear that? Because we would be closer to the truth. It would lead us to the truth. It would lead us to understand who we are, and it would cause this illusion to disintegrate.
Well, I agree with you, and they've been pretty successful. I mean, if you try to have, and I'm not putting anybody down, but I am definitely reporting what I have observed. If you try to have a conversation of this sort with Joe Blow off the street, you have to go through an awful lot of people before you find somebody who's receptive. But if you want to talk about beer, sex, baseball, wrestling, or, you know, anything like that, you'll have a crowd around you in no time. So that seems to say that most people are not operating on their higher octaves. And they don't realize it, but they're actually lending themselves to control by preferring to stay in those levels of consciousness.
Yes, and you know what? There is a truism, there is a truth, or a flash of consciousness that permeates one that sees that, in that it's not necessary, it really is not necessary to oppress the masses. It's not necessary to gain more power. There is no threat. There really is no threat lying within our elevation of consciousness. There is no reason why everyone could not be prosperous beyond imagination and not have the negative consequences that are attached to the current paradigm as it is today, or the matrix, whatever you want to call it. It's so ludicrous when in hindsight to look at the fact that we fear those that are power mongers, war mongers, and basically the thieves to the of society, to the detriment of the rest of the society, those that would enslave the society. Whereas to have us be more prosperous would be in their best interest.
Yeah, but it goes beyond that, though, Don. If you study what Reich said, I mean, he basically summed it all up, you know. He said that in this world, the way we are constructed as emotional beings living in a physical body, the expression of our sexual and emotional selves is a very, very important mechanism that shouldn't be interfered with. And the problem is, according to him at least, that when you get to a certain point where you cannot express yourself as nature intended, what happens is this no outlet for that proper energy the way God intended, and so it becomes inverted or perverted, and it switches from being a stimulus for the expression of affection to being an agent of control, manipulation, and suppression, because the person that's suffering from that condition feels that on a certain level and knows that this is what has happened to him, whether it's by happenstance or, you know, the work of his parents or other agencies. And subconsciously he says, well, if I can't enjoy this, neither can anyone else. And he turns that whole thing around and becomes an agent bent on propagating the same misfortune throughout the rest of humanity. And the more he works at it, the more perverted it becomes. And Reich's basic underlining premise was, you cannot be interested in power and control and be a gentle, loving individual at the same time. They are absolutely mutually exclusive. And all you've got to do is look at somebody like Dick Cheney, and you can see exactly what we're talking about. It's written all over their face. They're actually in agony. But they're going to make sure that they impress that same agony on as many other people as possible. And I have a tendency to agree with that.
Yeah, I'm in agreement, but I'm also saying at the same time that in the grander picture, I mean, basically you're saying, and Reich was very accurate in assessing the situation as it is. I'm going beyond that to say, what if everyone was prosperous? What if everyone was loving? What if everyone was recognizing that we really all come from the same place? What would happen? What could be so wrong with that being our reality?
Nothing. I think it would be heaven on earth. But the problem is you've got too many of these type of people that are at the controls. And the interesting thing about it is if you study the average person who is happy and well-adjusted, he's not interested in being in a position of prominence. He's not interested in controlling other people. And so the strangest thing about it all is that those of us who aspire to govern are the ones who are the sickest.
Yes, that's a truism. Well, Jim, we're out of time. As usual, this has been a very enlightening discourse. And I thank you for honoring what I've said, and I certainly honor the things that you've said. I think we're in total agreement with each other on many of these issues. What I hope will transpire in the near future, Ken Adachi is going to write this up and provide many, many photos, the close-up representations of these anomalies that we've been discussing, so that our listeners can actually see these pictures. And you know, we're trying to paint a mental image here through our words, hoping that the listening audience can visualize what we're talking about. The pictures themselves reveal quite a bit of information. And one may be thinking, well, we haven't answered the question, to whom do these craft belong? Now, intuition tells me that one is a gray craft, meaning it belongs, it's being driven by grays, gray aliens. And the other one is a draconian craft. And this communication, this data communication that you described as a sort of bridge, is actually visible in the photograph. I'm sure you saw that, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's clear as a bell.
Okay. And my intuition says that that's what was occurring, that there was data being transferred, and it manifested in its frequency as light. It becomes more apparent as you zoom in and enlarge the photo up to the point where you can avoid pixelation, because pixelation creates distortion in the image. So it's a study. Really, I think it opens up a whole new area of science too. I would love to just go out and take pictures of the night sky and see what's up there, you know, on a regular basis.
Well, that's an interesting topic for another conversation, because you know who did that, not with photographs, of course, but just by observation, was the Incas, and they actually had quite a bit to say about it. So maybe we could touch on that sometime.
Okay. Well, we're giving Ken Adachi the opportunity to compose something here and present this, because it's worth seeing. Now, this event occurred over Germany, as I mentioned, and someone had actually had this published in a newspaper or a magazine in Germany, and sent the copy of the photograph to Ken, knowing that he would be interested in it. And Ken has been also looking at sylphs in relation to chemtrails, too. And there's a lot of very interesting photography coming from around the world in that area. These are interesting phenomenon that are taking place. And it's a shame that more people don't wake up, because they're missing a show. There's a lot of new truths coming out at this time. And I'm sure even in the context of what you've studied throughout your career, you yourself have to say that we are becoming more perceptive and realizing there's much more around us that we've heretofore taken for granted. Would you agree?
Well, I agree. I agree with you. I think there is definitely a change in consciousness. I can feel it. My internal reaction to it, though, is I wish it would accelerate. It's not happening fast enough to suit me. Let's put it that way.
Well, maybe our consciousness will help that acceleration too, because the two go hand in hand. They're not separate. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in a future show. So I want to thank you, Jim. I want to wish you a great weekend. We may have a show next week. This is going to depend upon you if you want to go to work on the 4th of July.
I don't. But the 4th of July is no different than any other day as far as being able to talk on the radio is concerned. I'm always available for you. You know that.
Okay. Well, if we have engineers on the manning the station on that evening, then we'll do a show that night. So that's left to be found out. But in any event, I want to wish you a good holiday, if I don't have that opportunity beforehand. And if we do a show, then I'll have that opportunity that night.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, our regular Friday night guest, our science advisor, and now he's becoming our spiritual advisor as well. Mr. Jim Murray has been with us this past hour. He'll be with us next week if we're on the air live. It is the 4th of July next Friday. So that's up in the air, but we'll figure something out. In the meantime, special thanks to Don Newsom, Seth Hendrick, and Marcella on the sound. I want to wish everyone a wonderful weekend. We've got some great shows lined up for you next week. Things are going to get very exciting. Winfrey will be with us on the first show that we do, which is July 1st. Take that back. Next week, June 30th, I misspoke. Winfrey will be with us, and we're going to be talking again about the Council of Elohim. And in the meantime, I want to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and a good night.